Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine Podcast Radio. You're about to listen to an episode of Through the Tech Vine. So be quiet, pay attention, and get inspired. There is one truth that is not told enough. Technology is not magic, but it can be magical. Technology is human. It is part of who we are, our evolution, our future. Will it be a dystopian or utopian one? Well, that is up to us and nobody else. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
The red button. You are live.
It's kind of counterintuitive. Well, I guess the red light is on when you're live, but it should be a green button.
Yeah, but you're not driving a car, so.
How do you know? Just because I'm sitting in my room. Does it mean I'm not?
Maybe you're playing with a video game and you're.
I am playing a video game. You know,
like the wheels and gears and stuff. You get confused. Live, red, green light, and then you're gonna crash. Now be safe. Don't podcast and drive.
Don't podcast and drive. somebody did that. Was it? Wait. Wolfgang Gerlich,
yes,
or something, right? He had that. Didn't he have his car podcast?
Well, you know, we talk on the phone when we're driving. I guess we can do that. I don't want to stare at the thing, you know, but at the camera while I do that, that's for sure. Yeah. From there.
But as long as the camera's just staring at you and you're watching the road.
Yeah.
Exactly. But
well,
we did that
on the way to RSA 1 year. I don't think we didn't stream it.
Well, yeah. We did record it. And we one time we had the problem that we put the mic near the stick of the car. And we got that humming noise. So we learned a lesson or two.
We did. Trial by error.
Those was the chat on the road, which we hope we're going to start doing soon enough. But this is not it. This is not chats on the road. You're not driving.
I'm not driving.
I can see you. People are watching us, I hope. And today there's something new. We have been finally convinced, despite all our love and passion for radio and audio, to actually stream on YouTube as well. So for those watching there,
it's
another red button. Exactly.
You can't have too many, can you?
Never too many red buttons.
I guess not.
Too many red buttons. Yeah.
I guess
We should change our name things to red, Marco. That way I want to press them then.
Then you're going to want to press that. No, keep it orange. Orange is our color. Right, orange and black is ITSP Magazine. And this is the Through the Tech Vine, where now episode 7, the three of us, at this point is official, is the three of us, find out some news related to tech, and we discuss it. But there is a new thing, which is kind of my excuse not to research the news. I go through history, but by the way, I still have to search. And I bring that, and maybe I use it as a platform for having a conversation about the past, the present, and future of technology. Yeah. Which I have an interesting news, I guess, today. You will be the judge. So
I will judge you.
Okay. You will be judging me. You know, I'm sure.
So judgmental.
Yes.
So how is everybody doing?
My middle name.
Was it a good week?
It's been a busy week.
What did you do?
Busy week. It's, you know, it's after the short week from the holiday, and the week before that had been a little short because Friday was short. It's the first full week back. So feeling that, you know, got to Wednesday and was like, wait, the week isn't over. So feeling that a little bit, but you know, we got a lot of rain here, which has been really good because the plants are super excited. So.
We sure did not get that in California.
Well, so. I did. I got.
Oh, yeah. Well, I say California, not where I am.
For moments, pretty significant thunderstorms with a downpour for a couple minutes, and
that was it.
Yeah, so nice window shattering, not shattering, window shaking booms. No windows shatter. Let me make sure I clarify that.
Deep breath.
Yes. But big, dark, black clouds right ahead, right above. And I have this giant pine tree that I was looking up. And I was like, this is cool. I wonder if the lightning is going to strike. That's not cool. Let me get the light here.
So yeah. That actually happened at our last house. It was before the bat bit me. We got the house was struck by lightning, and so it went through it hit the wire in the dog fence, came in through the house that way. But we think where it started was actually from a tree, because a tree in our yard, one of the tallest pine trees, was split, and it's beautiful, but also really sad because this beautiful old healthy tree was destroyed. But yeah, it split like right down the middle, and it was so tall that they actually had to shear the top, remove that, lay that in the street, and then remove the rest of the tree. So it was really it was incredible. And the other thing that was really interesting, here's some interesting tech. We called our insurance agency, and we had started taking all these pictures to show, because bizarre things happened, like the router and the wall had just blown up.
Oh yeah, that's a lot of power right there.
I unplugged the phone because we had a VoIP phone. It was long enough ago that we had a VoIP phone. And I unplugged it, and as I was pulling it out of the wall, this flame burst out of the wall and burned up the side of the wall. Wow. It was all these. So we were taking these pictures, Ed was going around taking pictures, and I called the insurance agency, and I thought that we were going to have to document. They wouldn't believe it. They have lightning trackers. So she just went tappity tappity tap and said, "Wait, tell me your address again." And I told her, and she went tappity tappity. She said, "Yes. Okay, you're covered." That was it. They didn't send the adjuster or anything. They just told us to document what had been damaged, and we did, and it was all reasonable, and that was it. Because of their lightning lightning locator.
So that made me think that there's a pretty common occurrence then. It's not like when you say, it's like getting struck by lightning. It's like, well, that's never going to happen. But I guess people is one thing, but property is common then. I mean, if they are so prepared and like, no big deal.
They've got a locator. Well, so this house, I think, was just sort of its own like lightning rod, because the day before I closed on it, it got hit by lightning and the garage door openers got blown out. So in the closing, the people I bought the house from were super honest and incredibly nice. And they said, "Here, that's what happened." Because of course I didn't check it on the, I didn't know that in the walkthrough. They're like, "No, promise, we promise that's happened." And they wrote a check for what they thought would be the coverage of it. So this last house that we were in, I guess, was sort of like a...
Is it something that makes it a property or a location to be more prone to lightning, because it's tall, because it got trees around it? Is it like a magnetic field? I mean, I'm going, my brain right now is going all over the places because
I don't know. Wow. I should have asked the insurance person who had the lightning locator if that was if there were lightning hotspots.
Maybe something that you need to disclose before you sell a house. Like, this is
lightning zone.
This is hot. It gets hot. Wow. Amazing. Amazing. All right. Well, Sean, you just got to experience it though. So that's pretty cool.
I did. I know I didn't get to see any lightning, unfortunately, but I definitely felt it.
Yep.
Definitely felt it. And certainly, I don't know how I'm always nervous because I'm up at the mountains at the moment and lightning is beautiful, but it does hit trees and starts fire, so I'm always nervous for that. But
yeah,
anyway,
because climate change ain't helping for that either, I hear. Anyway, we're already like talking about news here, and that's what we do. We do best. We grab the news, we discuss it, bring some dark side of it, some positive, and then we have conversation, and we want people to join us. So the audience, you guys and gals and everybody, something that you wanted to discuss with us and even suggest, social media right there. And today we're on Facebook Live, we're on Twitter, we're on LinkedIn and YouTube as well. We're added to the game. So I say, Sean, do you want to get started with some news?
Let's do it. I think tradition has it that Diana leads off. So, Diana, what'd you bring?
Okay. So I brought snails.
Snails? Mm,
delicious.
Yeah.
Go very slow with that.
Yeah. So there's in Tahiti, they introduced a kind of snail, sort of like the old lady and the fly. You know, it's like there's an old lady swallowed a fly. You know, how's she gonna get rid of it? And then she swallows a whole lot of other things. So in Tahiti, they had a problem with some kind of bug, and they introduced a carnivorous snail called the rosy wolf snail. And this carnivorous snail was supposed to eat the things that they didn't want to have in the habitat, but unfortunately this carnivorous snail started to eat so many other snails that it successfully destroyed an extinct 123 different snail species in the area. And now they wanted to investigate, well, you know, how do we get rid of this snail? And, you know, because you don't want to like make the ecosystem even more off balance. But one snail type, which was the, I want to get this right, the Partula hyalina, which is referred to commonly as the P. hyalina snail. This snail actually didn't just survive the rosy wolf where 123 other species died. It was thriving. It was doing really, really well. And at first researchers were looking at it and saying, maybe this is because the P. hyalina has a very large brood when it procreates. It has a lot of offspring, but that wouldn't have explained why it was actually thriving. It would explain by how it survived, but they thought that there had to be more to the story. And then after a lot of research, they came up with a theory that it could be because in the forest canopy, most snails stay in the really dense, thick part because they have dark colored shells and their shells absorb the light. And if you absorb too much light and you're a snail, the next thing you go onto the delicious discussion there would be you get kind of snail jerky. So escargot jerky. So, which not good for the snails. But one, this P. hyalina snail, it has this milky translucent kind of shell that actually reflects the light back. So because it can reflect the light back, it's more tolerant of being in sunnier spaces. Thinking was that the rosy wolf could only go so far out of the canopy, out of the forest. And that means that it couldn't get to the areas that were inhabited by the P. hyalina, which is a great theory, but you can't just have theories and not test them. That's science, it's tech. So how are you gonna test something like this and find if this hypothesis is right or not? Well, the researchers were at University of Michigan, where also the smallest computer ever that ran on a battery was created. It was 2 millimeters by 5 millimeters. So it's this itty bitty little tiny computer, and you know where it's going. They thought, well, let's test where these snails are going. They put that tiny computer, they figured out how to put this tiny computer onto the snail. In Tahiti, they were allowed to and had a permit to put this little computer onto the rosy wolf snail. And in order to charge it, they turned that battery into a solar sensor. And to measure how much sun the snail was getting, they used the charge time of the solar sensor. They did not have the right or the approval, the permit to put a little teeny tiny computer on the P. hyalina, though, because it was only the rosy wolf that they were very interested in, have that Tahiti wanted to study. So in order to study the sun with the P. hyalina, they put the little bitty computer next to leaves that they sleep on. And apparently they don't move a lot, snails. So their reputation for being slow is kind of earned. So that was enough to understand where the P. hyalina were. And it turns out that with this incredible technology, this little teeny computer, one glued to the rosy wolf, and one on the leaves next to the other snails, they were able to prove that that's exactly what happened, that the P. hyalina is thriving because they are more tolerant of light and they can live where these rosy wolf carnivorous snails cannot get to them. So thank you, super cool tiny computer, for helping to prove that.
That's wild.
Yeah. First of all,
in the wild.
the first lesson is don't screw with Mother Nature. I would say that was the first one. So every time that you hear a story about bringing species that are not, what's the word?
Native.
Native of that environment, usually something bad happens. It's never really good. That goes with plants, right? That's why when you go in places, they're like, you can't bring seeds and other things like, you know, live elements. But the other one is that computers can be really small. And what do you do with that?
So you can apparently attach them to snails is one thing you can do with that.
It brings portable PC to all different level, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
So this is
brand,
not just
which
the
microchip. Brand is that one?
Is it very slow though? It's a very slow computer. Come on.
It is.
I mean, with the snail. It's a bad joke. Okay, sorry.
I think with IoT that, you know, when you make something purpose built, it can do a thing really well, and you can make it small. But yeah, I don't think that Sean's going to be able to be playing all of his driving games on the snail.
Definitely not. But you know what I like about this as well, because it's almost always one of the first things I think of when I think of new tech and new ways to use it is the stuff has to be powered, right?
Yeah.
And that was part of this, and it happened to be also part of the research. So I don't know if that was the driver of this is how we're going to collect the data. And oh, by the way, we'll use it to power the mini computer, microcomputer, whatever, but the power collection. Right.
So you're spot on with that, Sean. It actually wasn't part of the battery powered computer at first. When the two research groups, the tiny computer research group and the snail research group, got together, that's when they said, well, we need to collect the, you know, we need to collect the solar information. And one of the researchers in the tiny computer group said, you know what, we can charge it at the same time that we're collecting that information by measuring the speed of the charge.
That's a case where you have two people building their end of the bridge and it actually does come together.
And it goes back to the saying that we use sometimes, well, quite often here, about the convergence of technology that allow to do certain things, right? It's because you have that technology and you have that technology that you're able to do things that yesterday you couldn't do. So then from there, you add another convergence of another technology and you get more. I mean, I'm assuming you could put a very, very tiny little camera and then maybe you can get that to birds. So instead of like just the microchip, and you can get a huge amount of information from migration to filming it to sensors and all of that, all without arming, of course, the animal. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, that would be cool. The seeing like that on that, because if you've ever seen people who put GoPros on their dogs and then they throw the ball and you get to see it, it's just fascinating to see it from the dog. Yeah, I would love to see a bird flying from a bird.
It's on the dog's tail.
Well, I think they're already kind of doing that with just the camera. I think you can make cameras small enough that they're not bothering the bird. But the fact that you can do the visual and all the detection of everything, I mean, even from an environmental perspective, I think it's going to help to study so many more things. Really cool. I love it. Cool stuff.
I like that one snail had given consent and the other didn't, and they respected that.
They opt in. They had to opt in instead of opt out.
There you go. Snail consent. It's important.
But it also tells you a lot about the country where they did this research. Yeah. Very attentive to don't push it. Don't push it. You can do it on one snail, not on the other.
That's right. The rosy wolf, they're kind of carnivorous and invasive, but be careful with the other ones.
We like the other one. We don't want to leave her alone. All right. Very cool. I see a lot of possibility there for sure. Marine life, although they're not going to charge it probably with light there. So here goes. You're going to need another solution. If you go under the ocean, so you can do solar light for that.
Hydropower.
Yes.
Tiny, tiny little generators.
That's right. That's the, I'll have to fit the, I'm not going to go there. Try to how do you fit the propeller around the tail of something?
I don't know, but
there, around the snout.
I'm sure there is a solution for that, and there that is. That's why, you know, the thinkers are going to come in and, yes, and play that game.
Sweet.
Cool, very good, very good. Sean, how about you? Any snails?
I didn't go to the food one today, so no snails.
Okay.
See, only you could think snails and think food. Come on.
It's French. It's French delicacy.
True.
All right. No, you nailed it. I wasn't trying to hide it, Marco. Music. And so it's about that. And I think if you probably see in some of the other news that I brought, it's experience oriented. So I'm looking at it from the experience of what we're doing, and certainly with this one. And I'm loosely connected to the music industry and an understanding of how difficult that can be. And there's a lot of talent out there, a lot of great content out there that doesn't necessarily reach the right people. And a lot of them do it just because it's a hobby, right? And if they can make some money, cover some bills, great. Not many, unless you're huge or making a living. So there's that part of it. And then there's the fan part of it, which is my own experience and perhaps yours. And I know we started to see some opening of concerts, but then yesterday, like the Foo Fighters, I think it was in LA, said, hit the brakes. We're calling it off. Somebody in our troupe is not well. And therefore we're back to, they're not doing it. So in that case, it's not even on, but future ones may be back to virtual. So how do we as fans really engage? I mean, we can watch it on YouTube. I know some people do stuff on Twitch and things like that. Mm-hmm. And there's some interaction. You can have chat with some folks, and you have one view of a scene that's being presented. But what's that experience like? And what I found, in full disclosure, I was tipped off to this by a good friend that I think we all know. His name is Laz. And he said, you got to check this stuff out. And they basically provide this whole experience where you can engage with your fellow fans. You can have little parties. You can watch multiple streams. You can go backstage with the artist and really immerse yourself. And perhaps if you have it on the television through the app, you can see all these different things and interact with folks and direct chats with the artist as well. So for me, I mean, there's a lot of interesting technology there, not overly overwhelmingly wow technology, but one thing they do that I like, and I don't know if anybody else has done this, you're watching something, and let's say that in this instance, it's a concert. What guitar are they playing? Right. They're not talking about that, but this technology that they're using can actually identify the brand and the model of that guitar. And you can say, ooh, I like that guitar. I wonder, is that a custom built one, or is that one I can buy at Guitar Center or Sam Ash or whatever it is? So I can figure out what they're playing. What are they wearing? A Stetson cowboy hat, right? And which one is it? I want to get that hat. And so there's some interesting ways to connect further with the artist, and the artist to connect with the fans as well. So for me, it was all the all about the immersive experience and that whole thing. So that was my discovery this week.
Did you use it to watch any?
I have not used it yet. Okay. I believe they have an event coming up next week that's open to everybody. Snoop Dogg and a bunch of others are part of it, evidently. So that's going to be my first chance to experience it for real.
And do you have to pay more for some of the, like, to go backstage? Is it like at a real concert you have to pay extra?
So that's the full circle thing for the artist, where how do you monetize YouTube? It's probably just one shot. Somebody subscribes, and they use some other platform, but this allows them to set different levels, set different engagement levels. They can do virtual signings of an album with the people watching, and then that album gets sent to them physically or something, you know, that whole thing. And I'm sure NFTs will come into play here. Yeah, exactly. So there's a lot of promise here. And I mean, I love music and haven't had a chance to experience it. So I'm looking forward to checking it out, actually.
I like that, because you're right. I mean, the way that a lot of musicians make their money is on the tour. It's not just in the sales of the streams of the song. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that is really cool. Like you could have like a picture of you and them together on the screen, right? And they sign it, and that's your NFT, and you're the only one who has that.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's cool. Or I remember on one of Taylor Swift's tours, was it Reputation? She wore these sort of sparkly purple, I think they were Doc Martens. And I was like, what kind of shoes are those? And I would have just been able to use this and say, those are sparkly Doc Martens. And here's where I could buy them. But they're not. They're leather. So no. But
yeah, that's really right. Interesting. I had a conversation on Redefining Society with Josh Katz, that he is the founder of this company called Yellow Heart, and they do NFTs stuff. But more than that they're getting into that, his main thing was to avoid scalping. So, you know, like how you resell the tickets, and it's always been an issue even back in the days. But now with the internet and the bots that will go in and buy all the tickets the moment that, you know, a company will put it on sale, and then they just bump the price all the way up, and nobody really makes money,
right?
Except for the scalper itself, right? So the artist is not making more money.
A lot of money being spent.
But yeah, the fan is just paying more money for something that is just going to go in the pocket of somebody like that. And we talked about the potential of live music and how it's needed, but how we can go into virtual holograms and all of that. But this one seems is not even there. This is not virtual reality. This is just positioning of the cameras in certain specific spots, and then whatever you can access and what kind of interaction you do with the artist. So it's
I'm interested to see it. I don't know if
it's pretty cool.
You can pay for the floor, or you can pay for the mezzanine, or you can pay for the nosebleeds.
Checking out what happened in the green room before they come out. So, you know, as long as the artist is making money, I think they're going to be cool with that.
Exactly.
A
little known secret, which is why this intrigued me, because I don't know. There was a moment in my life where I was like, I'm going to do something really different. I don't know if Marco knows this or not, but my idea was buy an Airstream, kit it out with the best audio video kit available, and travel the states visiting a bunch of unknown artists at a bunch of off the grid pubs and live stream them. So this was very much in line with a vision, a dream that I had that I never obviously didn't pursue. But the idea that you could bring new music for people who wouldn't be discovered otherwise, and in this case, help them monetize that, right?
Yeah.
And engage with their fans, and perhaps even build a fan base that they wouldn't otherwise get. So,
yeah.
I mean, it was a feel-good story, and one that I personally related to as well. So
yeah, you told me that once. I remember that. And then, you know, I've always been a big fan of supporting younger artists, and of course living in LA, there is plenty of them that you're like, why are they not famous again? Because they're just amazing, but they're playing at the, you know, at the jazz club down in Hermosa Beach, right? Or something like that.
Exactly.
But so that's really cool. But I don't know, I feel like it's gonna as you describe it, I feel like it's going to help more the already famous artists, where people will be up for paying for that, maybe than the unknown artists that would be part of it. But you know what? It's a new present. It's a new integration of digital with real life. So yeah. I think we still want to go to the concert once pandemic allows. I mean, I sure miss that. Yeah. And but I also like to enjoy, you know, a good concert that stream in high fidelity and you know, just sitting on your couch. Why not? Okay, I'm getting old. Shit.
Well, although maybe you could do a little bit, because one of the nice things that happens in music is that some of the bigger acts, they on purpose find less well-known acts in order to open for them, because they're trying to, you know, pay it forward a little and bring attention to these less well-known acts. So maybe there's an opportunity here to bring that online, because I think right now, if there's an opening act and it's just streaming, you either wait or you fast forward if you're on a rebroadcast. Maybe this would also be some way to make sure people listen to the opening act too. I mean, I sat through a lot of bad opening acts in my day, but sometimes you really discover a great one.
But not only that, to connect it with what Sean's idea was, if you could do a technology that is filming in high quality music, high quality video, and you can put it in your, I mean, we're in LA, so it's a little bit different scene, but there is a lot of places where the musician really literally play for six people in a pub.
Right.
But what if you discover that through a channel and there is that social involvement of, you know, the crowdsourcing that people like that, which is kind of what happening with YouTube nowadays, right? But more like an organized way to say, maybe I want to discover some new artist that plays this kind of music. What is available? Well, who is playing live right now in the world?
Exactly.
It would be kind of cool. I mean,
yeah. It's interesting. The company name is Trubify, T-R-U-B-I-F-Y.
Trubify.
Like, is that the word of the day that we don't have?
Trubify.
I'm wondering if it's connected to the troubadour in LA. I don't know.
I was thinking that when you said Trubify.
I was like, Trubify. That's Marco was troubadour. Talking about the venues in LA. Yeah.
And the troubadour is the storyteller that back in the Middle Age that would go around and sing the stories, right? Believe that's what so it
maybe
is.
Maybe it's rooted in that more than the venue.
I have a question for you guys before we move on. Either of you have any luck with these algorithms that are supposed to predict? And I've tried a bunch of different ones, you know, the ones that do the mind map of like, well, if you love Pavement and Big Black, then you're going to love this band. And it's always some band that I'm like, no, I hate that band. Like, I can't hate it anymore. So, you know, other ones just, you listen, you say, I like this, and they recommend. I have had almost zero luck. Maybe it's that my taste is kind of all over the place, but I did just say Pavement and Big Black. But see, that's an old person taste, maybe. Like, but any luck? Is there anything good out there? Because I'm always... how do I find the next thing I want to listen to? And then I'm like, oh, Dinosaur Jr. just put out a new album. I'll listen to that.
Well, I mean, my own and my Marco listens far more than I do to apps, I think. But my limited experience in that sense is that it tends to find stuff that I already know about.
Yeah. I've had that too.
And or is mainstream and isn't the off the wall new thing that does really sound like
something you'd like.
That band that opened up for somebody else that you saw 3 years ago that now has their own contract and a couple albums out.
I have a personal battle with that, and I made some joke on social media here and there where I said, after so many years of Siri listening to what I listen and then proposing to me some country music, we really shouldn't be concerned about artificial intelligence taking over, because you clearly do not understand what I listen to. Given I'm quite eclectic, but I do a lot of old school, obviously, you know, like classic rock and all of that. But I kind of, you know, I like classical music and all of that. And it's just that easy check. It's almost like the easy button, like, okay, I could guess that. Oh, I don't know. If you like Iron Maiden, you're going to like AC/DC or Metallica. Mm. Well, thanks a lot, right? I mean, big freaking deal. But the new band, it's kind of hard to discover, but I feel like it's getting better. I'm going to have to say, okay. I think it's getting okay. better, and I think you need to give up a little bit of your information in helping them. So you really need to like that song and say, yep, mm-hmm. suggest more like that, or I really don't like this, and eventually it's gonna do it. I mean, I tried Tidal as an app as well, and they have some kind of like an engine for that, but I don't know. You really need to help it out.
I'm still old school. I turn on the local college station.
Nice. Whatever. You're gonna get a thumb up. Yep. From
the whatever they're slinging, that's the new cool stuff for
me. Yeah, let them do the job. Although they're a great editor. I mean, again, if you listen to whatever app you listen for music, that usually the good stuff is in what they like. Like, this is what we like now. And it's like the old school when you used to go to the vinyl record store and you're like, oh, this is good. Okay, I'm gonna trust the owner of this place, which probably listened to a lot of this stuff, right? I mean, I think you go by the experts and the person is like, it's like going to a restaurant. Like what is good? Well, it depends on your taste. Hmm. You know, what kind of food do you like? Everything can be good, but maybe it's not your taste. So it's not easy to please someone on a music menu, I think. Yeah. But yeah, so that's my answer. But I like the access to everything. But I just love this idea of just exploring, right? Like my dad is like, no, I need to have the CD or this. I've tried many times, like get, you know, this, so you can, any new album, you can, you know, you can listen to it. If you don't like it, you just move on to the next one. It's like, no, you just like to have that album. You like to take it out. You like to put it on the player. And I love that too. Don't get me wrong, but the idea to explore, it's pretty amazing to have no limits on what you can hear.
Yeah.
And I'm talking about exploration.
Okay.
I'm going to bring my historic thing, which is...
It's time to judge. Here we go.
It's time to... This is very predictable. It's July, and I'm going to go back in 1969 again. You know, the 20th of July is about to happen. That's when we landed on the moon for the first time. Right. So tomorrow, July 16, is actually when the Apollo 11 took off, and then there is those... few days that we get there, then we land the Eagle, and so the day in Easter is actually tomorrow of the takeoff of Apollo 11, and it's very quick topic, as I think at this point we all know about that. We know that, you know, there has been other exploration on the moon that we didn't go there. We all know Apollo 13 that they had to swing around, and I thought
it all happened on a soundstage in New Mexico.
Oh yeah, that too, Roswell. New Mexico. Yeah. I don't believe that, but we could talk about that if you want. My question was different, but is that really what you think?
No.
Do we have non-believer here?
I believe that.
Although I have been falling in the past for those photos analyzed about the dust on the foil on the lander, and how people say, no, the shadow is not what it's supposed to be, and all the study of the photography. Have you ever like tried to
I have not gone deep down into that level.
It's quite fascinating, but I don't doubt that. And but my question is, there is also the fact that a few days ago Richard Branson went on with the Virgin, which we talked about one of the first episode. Yeah. And then we got more going from Bezos to probably Elon Musk soon. Many people I've seen on social media criticizing this, being like, why does this billionaires go spend a lot of money going in space when there is so much we can do on this planet. There is the climate crisis. There is the pandemic, and they're just like throwing money out there. Well, there is a reason, I think, for that. But what do you guys think about space exploration? And is it legit to spend all that money to go there and not taking care of what happened here on the planet?
So, you know, I that was my first thought, was I was thinking along the lines of like, gosh, there's a lot of problems that we have here on Earth, and people like, you know, Branson and Bezos, you know, and Musk are so wealthy that it would be nice to see some of that money going to making sure children are fed and that we are addressing climate change. But then I was reading the counterpoint, which was that sometimes when governments don't have the money to invest in some of these projects, that it's actually good when private enterprise does some of that investment in research. And so I was thinking about that, I mean, it is their money. They're allowed to spend it the way that they want to. And maybe we will discover things that are going to actually push space exploration or being able to be in space. So I agree. Part of me felt like, oh, there's a lot of waste. I think the one concern I have is offsetting the carbon footprint. And if this is just incredibly, you know, a sink on resources of the Earth, just to go fly up 50 miles up and go up, oh, that's great, let's be weightless for a few minutes and then go back down. That I hope that there's some bigger view of what can be done with this. But I agree. My first thought was, gee, that feels kind of selfish. But then I was really rethinking that on, you know, based on A, it's their money. I mean, it's, who's to say how they spend it? And B, maybe they'll be able to sort of push some technology forward that governments don't have time to, or, you know, resource to invest in.
Yeah. And a mantra I lean on quite often is, why does it have to be an either or? Why can't we do that and also feed the children?
Yeah.
So I wouldn't want to not improv. Do something just because we're not doing something else. I think we should figure out how to do the something else. And if we want to do this too. So one could question the order and whether or not it's their responsibility. But I think one of the things Marco and I talk about quite often is, these innovations may not make sense for the greater society on surface level, right? We talk a lot about Formula One and the innovations they're doing there. A lot of times about space and the innovations there. They may not make an immediate impact on the way we live or how sustainable our planet is, but there may be something, to your point, Diana, there may be something in those experiences that triggers somebody to do something else. Maybe somebody goes up, gets a greater passion for that and starts another thing that finds a way to produce food in a space station that does feed these kids. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a leap there, but I think we, as humans, we want to press forward. I think we want to enjoy our lives. I think there is this divide between wealthy and not. I don't know whether space travel and whether it's a good thing or not is going to change that. So those are my thoughts.
But you're absolutely right, Sean. Like last week with bakery scan turning into, you know, cytoscan, you know, cancer scan. I mean, that sometimes a technology used in one way is repurposed for something, you know, that was used for good, but it then used for an even greater good. So yeah, it would be cool. Maybe there's going to be something that comes out of what is it being called? It's what, space tourism? Something will come out of space. Is that what the term is?
Space? They call it space tourism.
But, space tourism, okay.
Yeah, well, let me, when we went to the moon, we spent a lot of money. And it was a political decision. Yeah. It was the race, the arm race with Russia. It was, you know, the fact that they put the Sputnik first. They put the first man on an orbit first, and they didn't want to be on the
moon. First dog in orbit.
Her name was Laika.
Laika, yeah.
But a lot of money went spent, and a lot of things came out of that, and people don't think, and it still does. I mean, things, experiment that they do in space, no gravity on the International Space Station. They test from medications to, you know, how, you know, astronauts in lack of gravity, they lost their the bone density really quick. So it helped to test like osteoporosis medications and many, many things that we use today. I believe many, many things being invented.
My favorite is dehydrated food.
Yeah, because you gotta love
and
that.
And I'm joking a little bit, but in seriousness, I mean, for emergency preparedness, perfect. When I'm out backpacking and I have long weekends of needing
you don't go to space for the food.
No.
At least no, until you cultivate it yourself, maybe on Mars or the moon. But now, but here's the thing: like, there is a website, and we're gonna close
with dehydrated ice cream.
Yeah. So I'm gonna give you 10 reasons why we need to go to space, and this is not just by, you know, private or public. As NASA, it's been founded, of course, by the government. But the fact that there is an involvement of, you know, the other company from Virgin to SpaceX to Origin and the Bezos company, is like they're all working for the same thing. And of course, we human, we don't do anything unless there's money involved. So I think if it's going to take people with money to go to space to fund this thing, take it. But for example, there is protection from catastrophic asteroids, which is estimated at once every 10,000 years. A big one, kind of the size of a football field, will smash potentially on Earth. And that's not going to be nice. And every 100,000 years, maybe the one that destroyed the dinosaurs. So planet Earth is not forever home for us. And unless we kill all of us before we even the planet destroy itself, or we destroy the planet, or the sun is going to expand and destroy the planet, we're going to have to find a way to get the hell out of here. As a survival of the species, there's no question about it. I mean, Carl Sagan used to say that in the 70s.
That's not a downer, Marco.
Jeez. No. Well, it's the truth. I mean,
see, here's where the judging comes in.
This is why
he's just
we're
calm about it. He's like,
I've seen enough documentary and read about space and why we do it to be pretty strong about the idea that planet Earth is not going to be here forever. I mean, we can ignore it. We can, you know, be having conversation about PD reason, but, you know, the truth is a little bit different. You know, the little pale blue dot that Carl Sagan saw from the Voyager when he left, you know, it was going to leave the solar system. It just make everything into perspective. Astronauts that go even just above the 62,000 miles level to be considered space, when they look down, they have what they experience, a different feeling about Earth. I mean, the planet, people that spend time on the space station and so on. But again, it lead to great invention, good for your health, is inspirational, is important for national security. I could avoid that, but whatever, you know, monitor and spying on everything and everybody. We may need raw material from space. I'm going through a list here.
Good point.
Nations can work together peacefully. I mean, look at the International Space Station. Even when we're going at each other, there is Russians and
collaboration.
European collaboration there. And we realize that it's just one planet, right? And it's all connected. And then there's that thing that is about, you know, surviving as a species. I said that at the beginning. And then there's the fulfill of exploration, that this desire of we always had to explore, like, you know, we had to go across the ocean, we have to go down at the bottom of the ocean, we have to go up to space. It's just humans are, we're not gonna sit here and not explore. So go space.
All right. Are you gonna go up like as soon as you can?
I don't know. I would like to, but I certainly, unless they invite me, I don't think I can spend that money.
Are all the, these early trips, are they going to be just like Branson's was, just like an hour up and down? I mean, I for some reason I had in my head it was going to, they were going to be in space longer than just
I think that the Bezos one, which is about to happen, is going to, they're going to go higher. They're not going to be lifted, you know, already released by another airplane. They're going to get higher than 52 miles. They're going to get above 62 line. And I think they'll spend a little bit more time there, but they're not going to actually go to the International Space Station or not. But the idea eventually will be to help. I think there will be hotels orbiting around Earth, and people can go there and spend a week. That's, I don't know, maybe not a week, but a day, 2 days or something like that. But okay. As we wait for that, that hopefully is going to happen faster than the flying cars, which I'm still waiting for. We're going to say goodbye for today because we have to run on another event. And Diana, always fun. Always looking forward for this event, and I hope our audience does that as well. So
very cool. Thanks everybody.
Peace out. Share. Bye. Tell everybody. No. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Through the Tech Vine podcast. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share ITSPmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.